Doan, James Doan.
Where is 006.9 now?
He's on a mission, sir.
Do you expect me to talk?
An excellent plan, Mr. Doan. Look out, James!
Let me try and enlarge your vocabulary.
Oh, hey, my drink!
The biggest counterfeiter of actual money is the United States government.
Choose your next witticism carefully.
I want to be covered in drugs.
One day we must invent a faster working venom.
Yeah!
They cannot counterfeit gold.
The only gold I know about is the kind you wear.
Every law is backed by bullets.
Bullets do not kill. It is the finger that pulls the trigger.
Exactly.
Doom, I like that. Very good.
Hey.
Boy, I'll tell you, that is really well done. I mean, the segues in there are just perfect. I mean, I'm figuring that took you 15, 20 minutes to put together.
That was Curtis.
Oh, Curtis. Oh, my God.
That explains it, right?
No, it's really good. It's really good. Counselor Curtis, this is good. So this is great. This is our first December show.
Yeah.
Okay, first December show, and it's the Jack Rhodes show. Oh, no. It's
no,
not.
Yeah.
Jack Rhodes is not here.
Well, he was down doing some scuba splunking.
Okay.
In the caves.
Did
we
say down? He was down.
He was down with that. Okay. So, but we do have Counselor Curtis.
Hey.
And so we'll have our legal eagle here and the engineer, of course, Engineer Eric.
Yep.
And this is the Jimmy Doan show.
It is. Hey, I want to give a quick shout out to Brad, Robin, and Dave from Calico. I went down and saw them play in Tampa on Friday. They were a great show. If you guys ever get a chance, get down there and check out Brad.
Let's hope that they're Jimmy Doan fanatics. They're going to listen to the show.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, we did have a record month last month.
Yeah, third in a row.
It was the highest we've ever had. So it was lots and lots of people.
Thank you for doing that.
Interestingly enough, 70% of the people, at least that came to the website, were new. So either 30% are coming back, they can stand the pain, or else a lot of people are coming in one time and saying, I think I've had it with this guy, we're out of here. While we're here, though, before we get started on the big news of the day, which, interesting, I was thinking about doing this last night, but the counselor couldn't make it up here, and I had a list of things to do, but the news in the last 24 hours has changed everything, shall we say, dramatically.
Right.
So that's all went away.
New list,
which nobody has. Nobody has.
Right. List, so. No, there is no. It's a victim's list.
But anyway, we'll go over a little bit. I did want to say hello, though. We did get a nice note from Angie.
Oh, that's right.
No last name.
North Dakota, don't you know?
Yeah. Well, I sent her a note, and I said, you know, what I know about Fargo was covered in that documentary on Fargo. And I thought it was just snow and a pregnant police chief. But
didn't she have an email about some crazy new parking violation?
Yeah.
Laws
apparently, in Fargo, it's nippy up there.
Right.
I mean, it's going to get cold here right. tonight. It's supposed to go down to what, 40?
Really?
Oh my God! Yeah, it's supposed to really go to.
God, I understand. My sweatpants. I'm still in shorts.
Yeah. No. I mean, but I understand that in Fargo, it's nippier than that. It's like minus 40 or something, and there's like big white stuff all over the place. And
right.
So what they do, obviously, is they when they run to the store, into the Apu 7-Eleven or whatever, they leave the car running because it will like freeze over. It's like it's like a penguin.
A tauntaun.
Well, it's like a it's like a penguin egg. You know, I mean, if you don't transfer it just at the right time, it freezes like
you're going
in
to the cookie mark. Your car will freeze by the first marker.
Yeah, right. So it turns out in Fargo.
That's right. My friend's in there.
We got to close the blast doors. I'm sorry.
So anyway, they have a law that says you can't do that. I guess they arrest you or arrest the car or something. And the but I thought it was interesting that what Angie sent me was a link to the traffic laws of Fargo. Now, again, all I ever knew about Fargo was in the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
I read there are 87 pages of regulations in Fargo, and I mean, it covers everything. They do have a regulation, which I'm guessing is something that we would not have down here, between November 15th and March 15th, on odd days, no parking on the right-hand side of the road, and on even days, no parking on the left-hand or whatever that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Something weird like that?
Well,
I thought you were going to say something like you have to scoop up the reindeer poop off your sleigh or something.
No, that may be covered in a section that I didn't read. I didn't read every word of it, but obviously this no parking on opposite sides is about snow plowing.
Well, you know, when I was down in Venezuela a long time ago, they had a thing where your license plate, you're only allowed to drive on certain days.
Right. No, we had that here.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, no, we had that here in the United States.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Odd and even days. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. See, you guys weren't even, you were born, but not much. But, I can tell you this much, that your father, realized that, which is one of the reasons you had two cars. You had one with an even number and one with an odd number.
Right.
And so.
How are you supposed to drag race each other?
You didn't. You drag raced your buddies.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's it. And so, yeah, no, but.
Swapping going on, you're saying.
All the time. And, of course, that was against the law. And, I mean, it was SWAT teams, the whole deal. No,
instead of a bottle opener on your keychain, you had a tag wrench.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There was a big market for those James Bond flippy things, you know.
Right. You hit a little switch in your car, just rotates.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I don't know if here in Florida, I don't know how long it lasted. And to be honest with you, I believe it was just state laws or local laws or something. I don't think it was a federal law, but matter of fact, I'm sure it was state. But here in Florida, it didn't last long because we have a few too many touristicos who are coming into town, and you know, and you can see arresting some. Guy in his
is
Cadillac.
That an odd letter or an even letter?
Yeah, exactly right. So anyway, that was great. Also, want to say, as long as we're speaking about people from up north, we did get more visits from Kiruna, Isferia.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, they're telling all their buddies we get visits in Sweden from northern Kiruna. Of course, as we speak, is totally dark, 24/7.
Right,
and down in South Sweden, it's only dark 23 hours a day, and then we get notices from them. And also, for whatever reason, somebody in the UK, is it Bernie, I guess, must be telling all his buds, because we're getting lots of hits.
Well, thanks for everybody for telling your buds, because, again, we don't get record months without you guys doing that. So.
Right. Yeah. New Zealand, Australia also coming in. Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Mexico.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We got Hawaii.
Yeah.
And then
Hawaii actually is one of our states. That's not a foreign country.
I was going to do some homeland stuff here.
Oh, okay.
We got some repeat visitors from... Marion, Iowa, from Hastings, Nebraska, Vincennes, Indiana.
That's a repeat?
Yeah.
Huh, interesting. We'll have to go there and visit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, send us.
Invite us to your house, man.
Invite us to your house. Hey, we're coming. Hey, we do a show from your house, man.
Hey, bet you better have some jelly donuts.
Well, you know, Jimmy did a show from Hangar Dogs.
Right.
And it was one of their more popular shows, of course. Naturally, as you would expect.
Right, of course.
And so we do that.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, they even fed me and everything. So it was good. Mrs. Jimmy was out there with the... So that's about it. The big notes of the day, of course, are that South Park is going to be free, which upset me because Biggest news. South Park is going to be free. Free. And, you know, I've paid big money for all those DVDs. And, you know, I would imagine that the bidding on South Park DVDs on eBay... Exactly. And of course today is Tuesday, the whatever it is. What's today, about the 4th?
Yep.
And today I was going to run, maybe after the show's over here, I'm going to run over and see if the Simpsons movie came out today on DVD.
Oh, really, did it?
Yeah.
You know what? There's a new Futurama movie out on DVD right now.
You're kidding.
No, a full-length feature film, and they're putting three more out.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it out?
It's out now. It came out last Tuesday. Gino already bought it and was watching it on his HD TV.
And he didn't want to send us a link to it or anything.
Oh, no, he sent me one.
Great. Don't share.
I thought I forwarded that to you guys.
Yeah, right.
Is this a totally downloaded bootleg thing? Or
No.
This is actually for purchase at the store.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And speaking of purchases, do you, of course, know that the Ferraris come out with a $3,000 item?
Keychain?
No, a boombox.
Oh, really?
A boombox. $3,000 because it's got the name Ferrari. Can you believe that? I mean, it's just honest to God. Well, so
is
anyway,
it fast?
Yeah, I'm supposed to be. I mean,
the CD's twice the speed normal.
Yeah, that's right. That's it exactly.
Rewind is fast. It's fast forward.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's you know, it's the size of a regular old boombox for $29.95. I guess it's like when women buy those purses, you know, for $3,000 and $4,000 and $5,000.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, well, you know, you ask yourself that question, of course. Now, Ferrari, I understand. Guys would understand. You know, you're carrying around a boombox that's made by Ferrari, obviously, but it's got to be the same thing as a Prada purse or something. I couldn't tell the difference between something that you got out of the dump and a $5,000 Prada. But so that tells you that women obviously would buy that for, not for the guys, for other women.
Right.
So that's it.
Ferrari makes a laptop, too, I think.
I don't know anything about that. This was the boombox. And, you know, good luck on competing with Bose or whatever for, you know, only $500. So anyway, the big news that we're going to talk about is Hugo.
Hugo!
And I'm disappointed that Jack's not here because he loves to talk about Hugo.
Hugo!
Well, man,
yeah.
Hugo.
All right. So anyway, yeah, he
lost something. Narrowly lost.
What happened with that?
What happened?
This was your international social experiment. It went horribly awry.
No, contraire.
Okay.
Let me just tell you exactly what this is all about. And this actually is going to reinforce what Jimmy has a take on. Jimmy has a spin. Jimmy had predicted, of course, that the vote would be, you know, 103% of the voters would vote for Hugo's plan.
Right.
It was close. It's 49-51 or something.
Right. But he lost.
Right.
And this, so Jimmy is coming back and saying, well, he knew this.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, this is the thing that's so cool about this. That's going to show up what socialism is all about. Think about it for a second. Here's a guy who wanted to have this plan, socialist utopia, and he put it out to the vote, and the idiots didn't vote for it. So the question is, how long is it before Hugo is going to break out the rifles and street sweepers and say, look, what I told you was this is a goddamn utopia, and I'm telling... Exactly.
Yeah. It's for your own good.
That's right. So my point is that this ain't over yet.
Okay.
Jimmy is making a new prediction.
Okay.
That the socialist utopia will still come. It may not come through a vote, which means if they voted it down, and it's interesting because the media are all saying that the Venezuelans woke up and they realized that this was, they're going downhill with the social. I'm telling you, no.
Oh my God!
That's what they said when they woke up.
Yeah, that sound effect was quicker than
he's quick on that button today. So I'm telling you that he is not even remotely going to give up. Nobody gets that kind of power. Remember now, he's got control.
He's going to give up.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, you can see him.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the vote is in. Okay, let's buy Gorsby guy.
Just have a nice day.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like Jim from Taxi. Okie doke.
Yeah, right. I don't think so. No. He is, this is.
You
not,
won't
don't
give me the Genesis device?
Okie doke.
So
the question is, what's he going to do?
That's a good question. I'm going to read through it.
I'm going to say that he's going to call for another vote. Vote here within 2 months. This time he's going to get the vote out.
Okay, I don't think so. I think he's going to do it another way. I think he's going to go through not a Jim, not a James Craig thing, but through a back door. he's going to. I think he's going to do it another way. He's got. Let's face it. He's got control of the National Bank. The official exchange rate, as we've talked about, I don't know if you know this, but I was looking here. The official exchange rate is three times the legal rate now for whatever money they use down there.
Really?
Yeah, that's since he's taken over the National Bank. He's got control of $60 billion of oil. Now, one of the things that a friend of mine used to say quite some time ago was, you don't have to own anything, you just have to control it.
Right.
And he controls $60 billion.
Right.
I mean, you know,
that's
hi, Bill Gates, I think I'll buy you.
Yeah.
Right.
That kind of thing. So it doesn't matter.
I gave him $50 today.
Yeah. Who, Bill Gates or Chavez?
Chavez.
So anyway, it's
the defeat.
Yeah.
It says the article here by Simon Romero from yesterday, the defeat slows Mr. Chavez's socialist-inspired transformation of the country. And, of course, it's not even a speed bump. I mean, we're talking about an acorn in the road is what this is.
His super-powered SUV.
Yeah. They interviewed some people, and she's all for here's this Mrs. Veracita, you know, Miss Truth in Lending or whatever her name is. It's what it translates to. Wearing a red shirt, red cap, and belt with Che Guevara's face on it, said she credited Miss Chavez's government for giving her a $3,800 loan to start a small clothing business. You know, and of course the small clothing business is T-shirts with Che Guevara's face on it. So anyway, some Chavez supporters expressed concern that if they voted against the measures, they might be retaliated against. Well, yes, that's one of the reasons why the vote probably was what it was. The voting seemed to largely unfold without irregularities, though there were isolated reports of fraud and violence. Recounts are allowed under Venezuelan law, but it would have to be approved by the Supreme Court, which is controlled by Mr. Chavez. I mean, so guess what? The United States remains the largest buyer of Venezuela's oil, and that may change here shortly as the Chinese come in. Uncertainty over Mr. Chavez's reforms, meanwhile, have led to accelerating capital flight as rich Venezuelans and private companies rush to buy assets abroad denominated in dollars or euros. The currency, the Bolivar, currently trades at about 6,100 to the dollar in street trading compared to an official rate of 2150. So right away you can tell what's going on. Domestic, the domestic oil consumption is surging because of a subsidy that keeps gasoline prices at about, guess how much do you think you have to pay for a gallon of gas down there?
Oh, it's like 20 cents.
7 cents.
Seven, okay.
So if still,
let's go down there and fill up.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, the point is that, he might have had a narrow defeat, and of course, I'm a little surprised about. He had claimed that he was going to cut off, you know, do a Venezuelan oil embargo if the United States questioned the vote, and we didn't because he quote lost unquote. But no, sorry, Jimmy's prediction is bullets will fly before there's another vote, and you're saying there'll be another vote before bullets will fly.
I just think there'll be another vote where, like I said, he turns out the votes. You know, like he. He sends the people around to their houses to get out of your house.
Yeah, like you're going Chicago to vote ward today. Politics. Or
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what from what I understand, he has a large mechanism of get out the vote.
Well, he might, but it obviously didn't work this time.
And
what's interesting because what I found interesting was up a week or so up to leading up, there were polls everywhere saying that he was going to have a problem.
Right.
I mean, in other words, it wasn't like he didn't know.
Right. Well, and that's what people said, you know, you don't count him out because he knows what he's doing.
Right.
So we'll see. I think it's equally likely that he will try what you've suggested, which is some sort of strong arm of the Congress or the Supreme Court. Or
here's the deal. It says a recount is permitted in Venezuelan politics, but it has to be authorized by the Supreme Court, which is controlled by Hugo. So the question is, will he tell his buddies to do a recount?
There's going to be a recount.
And it'll be 51-49 the other way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, again, this is, you know, maybe they could get the Diebold people down there.
Either way, any way you slice it, in 2 months' time, I believe he'll have these reforms passed the way that he wanted to, one way or the other.
Well, the major one, of course, was he could stay in office for life. And as I've always said, if you're that good, what do you need a constitutional amendment for? You just keep running like Roosevelt did. You just keep running and you get elected. If you're doing a great job, people will
elect you. Even he knows he's not that good.
Right, exactly. I mean, why do you need, if it's so good, why do you need a law? That's what I've always said. If it's that good, it's like public education. If it's that good, why do you need to arrest people and throw them into jail if they don't send their kids there?
Yeah. So we got the freaking George Orwell call today from the computer at the school.
Yeah.
Your daughter was late to first
grade. Oh, really?
Yeah. No way, really?
Oh, yeah, that's what, you know. And it's like, okay, you know, talk to the screen.
Talk to the screen. I love it. Talk to the tape. Okay, good.
Wow.
Well, moving on about other countries, international news before we get locally here. Kasparov, you know, he was the
chess champ.
And, of course, he's been under house detainee. They did a lot of things because he's out against Russia. He says, you know, the democracy is failing. And it is. Kasparov warns of chaos in Russia. And he's right. I'm as I think I said in our last Jimmy Doan show, the real threat, if you wanted to talk about an international threat, would be from Russia when Putin takes over, mm-hmm. as he's going to do, because he won a landslide victory mm-hmm. this last weekend. And different from Hugo.
Well, I thought he already was in charge of it.
No, he's like more in charge, because what happens is he's stepping down as president, but it turns out that he's actually going to end up with more power because of the way this vote went. All his people are now in. I mean, you talk about a totalitarian regime. I mean, people are looking at Hugo. But Hugo ain't going to send no bomb up here. I mean, he's sending the oil. Yeah, okay. But the fact is that Russia, you know, they got more people out there. I mean, they got armies and they got soldiers standing around with nothing to do. And
the thing about Russia is that they, even at this point, their economy, I think, is getting so interdependent on the rest of the world economy that they have too much to lose.
They did before. Again, power knows no bounds. People that want power, when you think about it, when you talk about the economy and so forth, the simple fact is that, generally speaking, most exchanges are voluntary. The good ones are voluntary. You go to the McDonald's or to Moss, or not Moss Brothers, but Belk's or whatever, J.C. Penney's, and you give them
Brothers. I think that's from the 40s.
Yeah, the Five and Dime?
That's right. Yeah. The Malt Shop.
We know. Right. You go to the Malt Shop, right. And you get...
A&W.
They're still in business. So, anyway, you go and you give them your money, and they give you the product, and everybody's happy. You don't need a third party in the transaction. And the question, of course, the only time, and I'm going to talk about this more later on, because I got a lot to say, the only time you get a third party is when is you get somebody with a gun that says, wait a minute, this is not, one of the other parties says it's not fair, and so the guy with the gun shows up. Well, unfortunately, the guy with the gun never leaves, and he starts to regulate all your transactions, even the ones you'd like to do voluntarily, so that's what happens when you get a government with that way, and they grow. Anyway, so he warns of chaos, and he's right on the money. He's one of these people that says that he's trying to warn everybody that the guy's really taken over. And what you said is that, well, they have too much to lose in the trade business. Well, you know, not as much as Venezuela does, I can tell you that. Venezuela, their only thing they export is oil. Now, Putin
And they're not attacking anybody. I mean, you know, as much as they attack with rhetoric, I mean,
right.
Venezuela is not arming up.
But right now, Russia's attacking, like, Chechnya or someplace. I mean, they're doing that. And, of course, they say it's an internal matter. Get lost to the UN and everybody else. So, and, of course, they get a lot of oil money, too. I think a third of their, you know, Venezuela's like 90% or something. Russia, it's, I don't know, their foreign exchange is like, I don't know, 25 or 30% or something oil. I'm guessing. But it's a bunch. And he has control over it. The deal is, though, that that is going to be, probably end up being a totalitarian regime once again, and the people be damned. And you say that, you know, who's got too much to lose? They didn't care for 70 years before. They don't care now. It's all about power. Once the aphrodisiac of power trumps everything.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, it just there are lots of people over there with lots of interests, and
but he's putting them out. That's the point. Those guys, you know, those guys that when the wall first fell, when Russia first collapsed, the Soviet Union collapsed, and the countries all broke off. The corruption was unbelievable. They were selling off the businesses to their buds, who were having little fiefdom empires, and they were controlling a lot of stuff. I mean, the corruption was massive. Well, Putin's put all those guys like in jail or run them out of town. So he's taken over a lot of those things.
Well, to the extent that there's a freer market there, I mean, now I'm not saying that there is, but to the extent that there is, that's a good thing, and that makes them more dependent on the West.
Okay, well, let me tell you this, though. This is what you'll see is this, and you're right about one thing. There is an automatic check on a country, which is, as I say, we just saw that going away in Venezuela, and that is the exchange rate. Pure and simple, if the exchange rate, if the official exchange rate is the market exchange rate for the money, that's about all you need to know. You don't need to know much else. If you can go in and exchange your rubles for euros or dollars or marks or whatever that is at the same rate, rough plus or minus, on either side of the border, then that is a check on the ultimate power. You will find that will go away. And that is...
Is the Russian exchange rate changing?
I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know. So maybe somebody could let me know, could call in, you know, 1-866-95-JIMMY and tell us, or send us a link on the website. The deal is that there are a lot of other indications that a country is going down the toilet, but that is one of the premier ones when you can't take your money out. Like in this country, even though the dollar exchange rate is kind of fixed, more, and I say fixed, it's market rate. When you go to any place else, it changes daily. But if you try and march out across the border with $10,001, that's, no, I'm sorry, you can't do that. I mean, you can get your money out of this country, but it's a pain in the butt. Any real money. So that is one of the first indications that you are clamping down, is when you can't move yourself or your money or your goods in or out of a country, right away you know that there's the problem. You don't need to know anything else. That's the indicator. That's the red light flashing. So anyway, continuing on about Russia, this is, I forget where this was, but when does a legitimate Russian political protest become an illegal gathering? This is this is great. Answer, when a second person joins in. So says Victor, I can't pronounce his last name, a radio journalist and political satirist who has been staging a lone protest outside of Moscow police headquarters Wednesday, holding a sign saying, "Free Garry Kasparov." Kasparov, whatever. Then a provocateur came out with a flag and stood beside me, this guy told Reuters. And then he said police were waiting nearby in a vehicle and walked over to detain him and the unknown accomplice. The legally allowed lone protest had turned into an unsanctioned demonstration, he told Reuters. Kasparov, a former chess champion leader of the minor opposition political party, was arrested by Moscow police last weekend after a sanctioned protest march, which he led, was broken up by riot police. He was released from jail on Thursday. A lone protest does not need official permission, said somebody at the some court in Moscow. I'm not going to try and pronounce the names. Russian authorities closely monitor demonstrations, authorizing the number of attendees, where and when they can rally. This guy was one of several lone protesters detained on Wednesday outside the police headquarters and charged. The provocateur told the police joyfully when asked what he was doing out there, provoking it. That's what we do. It speaks to the degradation of our society because it's all being done in the open, so forth. The police know it's provocation. Their proof is just a couple of empty nothing. So the deal was that now a crowd is two in Russia. A legal crowd. A legal gathering of a multitude is two. Here, I don't know what it is here locally. It's about 10, I think.
Well, no, it all depends. You have to get a permit, and the permit is of a number.
Okay, but the question is, I don't know here in Gainesville, I mean, can you have three without a permit? Can you march with a sign down the road with three people? You certainly can march down the road with a sign with one. That I know you can do. Because they tried to pass that law against the panhandling, which I think they did.
Well, there's those guys that dress up as Jesus and tote that big cross around.
Right, or the end is near.
Right.
Because we know that is.
Well, it's been there for a long time.
Yeah, those guys have been here for years.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, the end is near. You know, repent, tomorrow you'll die. And that's the sign is weather all brown and tattered around the edge. Which, of course, brings us to my next topic.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change may wipe some Indonesian islands off the map. Did you see this?
Bye-bye.
This is from Jakarta. Many of Indonesia's islands may be swallowed up by the sea if world leaders fail to find a way to halt rising sea levels at this week's climate change conference on the resort island of Bali.
Now, they will fail. If they fail...
Let me tell you, this is so great. I mean, this is King Canutism at its best.
Stop the tide.
Stop the tide, right. Now, I mean, this is... Now, think about it for a second. I don't know if we talked about this, but one of the problems... They're having this in Bali. Do you know what the major problem in Bali is today? The airport can't hold all the private jets. It's not big enough for the private jets that have flown in to attend this thing. The charter and private jets. I mean, all the people that are attending this thing are in their Gulfstream 4s and 5s coming, you know, sailing in there. And the airport...
Low carbon footprint for those entourages.
No way. I mean, and, you know, each one of these... There's like 160 ministers showing up, and you can bet that none of them are flying commercial. No way, Jose. Can you imagine watching the robes flowing and the turbans and everything in a commercial airplane, you know, the 737.
The parade of hats.
The parade of hats in chump class, you know.
And 7,000 tyrannosaurs had to be distilled to get those people there.
Yeah. So anyway, no, they're all flying in their plane, you know, the East Gabin Airlines, you know, whatever the hell it is, you know, that guy's going to show
Sounds
up.
Like a nice conference.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the point is that this, what I love about this is we already know we're doomed. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, give it up. Here's I just love this article. It's quite extensive, and I'm not.
It has a lot of good stuff in it.
No, it's really great. The Bali conference, of course, is aimed at finding a successor to the Kyoto Protocol, which expires in 2012. And of course, I forget when the Kyoto Protocol was, like, you know, 6, 8, 7 years. It was during the Clinton thing, right?
I love this for Futurama. Kyoto, the anagram lovers, Tokyo.
So yeah. So the point is, it was done during the Clinton thing. We never, you know, we said screw you the whole time, and we're not alone. I mean, where there's like, and of course, China Bush and India are exempt, huh?
I think it was during Bush, but I'm trying to remember if it was Bush 1 or 2, because I'm pretty sure it was Bush who snubbed him.
Bush 2, I think, didn't sign it again, but I thought it was the Senate had snubbed him, 98-0, I think, during Clinton. I'm not sure, but whatever, it's been a long time. Anyway, it's going to expire in 2012, like, so what? I mean, to me, it's something that never got used. It's going to expire. So what?
It's going to expire.
So anyway, with over 17,000 islands, I love this. I didn't realize this, that Indonesia's got 17,000 islands. Many of them are not uninhabited, of course. Many at risk being washed away. Indonesians are anxious to see an agreement reached quickly that will keep the rising seas at bay. I mean, here's the deal. An agreement is going to keep the rising seas at bay.
Right.
What I'm saying, my guess is that you take all those the pages of the agreement and kind of make a dike out of them or something.
Something crazy.
I mean, this is it's insanity. Of course, just last week, tides burst through seawalls, cutting a key road to Jakarta's international airport until officials were able to reinforce coastal barricades. Island states are very vulnerable to sea level rise. Well, duh. And even large islands are at risk because of global warming, mass destruction. You know, oh, woe is us. Tens of millions of people will have to move out of their homes. One of the things you don't realize is the population of Indonesia is just, I mean, it's just like.
It's huge.
It's huge. Like 150, 200 million. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just huge. It's very populous. The Maldives. Oh, okay. Several small island nations, including Singapore, Fiji, Kiribati, Tuvalu, and Caribbean countries have raised the alarm over rising sea levels, which could wipe them off the map. The Maldives, a cluster of 1,200 islands renowned for its luxury resorts, has asked the international community to address climate change so it does not sink into a watery grave. I mean, here's it. 1,200 islands, luxury resorts, and oh, help us, world.
You know, I know.
Go away.
Okay, 234 million people in Indonesia. 1997 for the Kyoto Protocol.
So that was during Clinton.
Yep. And what I like about this article here is that it says that the temperature is going to change between 1.1 degrees Celsius and like 6.4 degrees Celsius. Like, margin of error,
yeah.
500%.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. I mean, well, less than half of Indonesian islands are uninhabited, and many are not even named.
Right.
So now the authorities are hastily counting the coral-fringed islands that span a distance of 5,000 kilometers. It's roughly the size of the United States. And disappearing islands, coastlines would not only change the Indonesian map, but also restrict access to mineral resources situated in the most vulnerable spots. And, of course, that's a lie. If we can go get oil,
right.
You know, 10 miles under the Arctic, for God's sakes, give me a break. Or not 5 miles, whatever. Only a couple of miles under the Arctic. So it says there are 42 million people in Indonesia living in areas less than 10 meters above average sea level who could be acutely, well, okay.
That's only 20% of their population.
Yeah, hey, drown them. So one solution is to cover Indonesia's fragile beaches with mangroves as the first line of defense. A more expensive alternative is to erect multiple concrete walls on the coastlines. And,
send them a bunch of straws.
Where are the Italian gondoliers when you need them?
Right,
I mean, look, hey, come on.
Yeah, play O Solo Mio for me.
So anyway, it will be like a permanent flooding.
New theme
this guy
song
said. By 2050, about 24% of Jakarta will disappear, possibly even forcing the capital to move to bad dung. True, it's bad dung.
Yep.
A hill city 180 kilometers away east of Jakarta. Well, having been to Guatemala, I can tell you they had a big earthquake. Twice they've had earthquakes, and they've moved their capital twice because the place, you know, rumbled down. So that doesn't seem to be a serious problem.
Yeah, big deal. Look,
well, I mean, and you know, let me tell you, they'd probably be better off without the damn capital. This would be one way to get rid of the government.
Yeah. I know. Don't you wish D.C. was below sea level?
It was a swamp. And
right.
Of course, now it's
a cesspool swamp.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's one of those things also. I'm sure if Jack Rose was here, he'd say, well, what's bad for the islands is great for the coral reefs.
Right. Yeah. I know. I mean, there's a silver lining.
They said they were counting them before it's too late.
Yeah.
Too late for what?
Yeah, for them to turn into reefs, and then we go dive on them.
Indonesia could lose 2,000 of its islands by 2030.
And those are the unnamed
sea levels continue to rise.
Those are the uninhabited, unnamed ones.
Yeah.
That, you know?
Well, duh. I mean, you know, look, if you're... It's...
Here's your new theme song. Indonesia. And Italy, get cranking on those boats.
Yeah.
New export. They could send some of their best architects over and
that's it,
be rocking, you know.
It's the new Venice. New Venice after new Orleans.
Right.
No, I mean, seriously, when you think of it, that's great. I mean, these guys, I just love the arrogance of these guys. I mean, they're 160, I don't know how many, they're meeting down there, and they're coming down in their private Gulf Streams, whatever it is, big jets, can't even find parking place on the tarmac because there's so many of them, and they're going to talk about, they're going to stop the waters from rising. I love it! I mean, yes! Hold up your hand, pal. Oh, what a bunch of jerks these are, I'm telling you. I mean, and you know... It is luxury to think that the old saying, a camel is a horse designed by a committee. Would that this were only going to be a camel.
Right.
Would that this is not going to be some slime bag alien monster from hell. With, no, mutated. Oh, no.
It looks like something that got, you know, put through a matter transporter and...
No, and they forgot. And they forgot what was on the other end or something. Right. No, it's going to be... This is going to be some... Yeah, exactly. It is going to be some... Snot-driven, just unbelievable piece of crap.
Right.
You know. And again, as I said,
make
the paperwork alone. Yeah, make Jabba look handsome.
Right.
Oh, you know, kiss you, kiss you. No, all of those alien creatures. I mean, how about that guy that walked around on his hands, you know, at the pod race? What was his name?
I don't know, man.
In Attack of the Clones. He was the one that lost the race to the... Young Anakin. Well, whatever. Okay. Anyway, he was an ugly.
Oh yeah, that little slithery guy.
Yeah,
right.
But I mean, he's going to be handsome, brute
compared to
what's going to come out of this conference.
Stud.
That's it. So I mean, this is, and to think that they, I mean, the arrogance, just the unmitigated, just, it, you know, I would laugh even harder, except for the fact that somebody's probably going to try and do something to me.
Right.
Right. They're going to try and take your money.
They've decided. The Senate just passed, I think it's the Senate, they're in the process of raising the, I don't know if it's become law yet, the average miles per gallon by 2020 to 35 miles a gallon or something.
Really?
Yeah. They're working on that hot and heavy. I think Bush said he was going to veto it, but you know it's going to come back next year when Hillary's in.
Right.
And it'll go. But again, this is going to be a distortion. There are a lot of people saying that... that one of the reasons that things have improved is because of all the laws in the United States up to now. Of course, the big distortion was the number of SUVs that showed up since light trucks were exempted. And it's my understanding that this new one, the light trucks are going to be exempted again. I think, although they're going to try and get some of the SUVs with the 35 mile. And of course, some of the people in Detroit are signing on. Why? Because they've got the technical wherewithal to, number one, help make the rules. Which means that there will be some exemptions that they'll be able to live with. And, of course, the average means that you can put out...
That's what I was just thinking.
You could put out 14 battery cars that have no carbon footprint.
Right, right.
And balance that off with a and balance that off with a gas-eating Hummer, and you're okay.
Chuck Norris can divide by zero.
That's right. So we expect no good to come out of that,
right.
And that's interesting.
But I got this, but this one is Infiniti, so...
This car, we sold one of.
So we can do anything we want.
Our average.
Average, right.
That's 1,000 miles a gallon.
That's right. No, this car, because we never start it,
right.
It gets infinity right. miles
a gallon.
And in fact, what we did is we've planted it with kudzu, so it sucks carbon from the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've done is we got this car growing in Detroit or whatever it is. It's a giant kudzu vine, and this car counts as 400 Hummers. Speaking of car Hummers,
a million carbon credits.
Right. That's right. So that's what they're going to do. Let's plant a tree and build.
Well,
a Hummer.
You know, when the government starts putting regulations, their market always finds a way.
They just never think that they're part of the market.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. And we just like these guys in Bali, we're going to hold back the tide. God. I mean, well, you have to. One of the things that's interesting, again, I'm going to talk some more about this. It has to do with the distortions in the market.
The more you tighten your grip, Tarkin, the more star systems will slip through your fingers.
And that says it all. That's the gum wrapper. I mean, that says it all. There is, you cannot, every law begets new laws. Every tightening begets new star systems that slip through your grip.
Right.
Again, as I said before, the most transactions, I was listening to Stefan Molyneux, which reminds me, I'm going to go down there. I think next month he's got some kind of thing in Miami, and I'm going to go down to it. I haven't been listening to him lately because he does a lot of the psychological stuff that I'm not really into. But I listened to a couple of his old shows, and he was talking about intervention and fairness. And one of the things that I do find is that I think that humans have a basic idea of what fairness is all about. One of the things that he talked about on this particular podcast of his was that somebody who's buying something would ideally like to get it for free, and the person selling would ideally like to sell it for infinity. Well, that's not true. I think that basically we are fair people. I mean, I think that first of all, it would be a distortion of the market if you got something for free, because that means everybody would get it and there wouldn't be enough. I mean, I don't need to go there. But the bottom line is that I think you've seen it a couple of times when you're willing to pay for something, you say, that's really cheap. Or sometimes you'll like today, I think I was talking to somebody, and it was fair. It was a fair price that the guy was going to charge me. I didn't have any problem with it. You know, okay, it would have been nice to get it for less, but, you know, it was a fair price. And that's we negotiated it out, and that's I think people understand basically what fairness is. And I think that most of our transactions are of that kind. They're fair transactions. You buy, sell, whatever it is. What happens is when one of the sides perceives that it's an unfair transaction. And what do? You could call in the big guns. And, of course, one of the things that happens is that if you call in the guy with the gun, the government, for instance, to mediate this thing, what you hope is that the mediator will be a totally unbiased person. That is a totally objective, have nothing to weigh in on either side. And
no lobbyists.
No lobbyists, no nothing. This will be a person who is mechanically, robotically objective.
Data.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what you would hope. Of course, I think what Molyneux would point out is that some people would hope that the gun person
is on their side.
Right. Well, of course, no, Danny, because that's the corruption. No, don't get me wrong. No, but I'm saying that even people that, and that's where the corruption arises. I'm saying that a lot of people that are dreams of an objective, the judge or the city commission or the courts will be fair, and that's why we have them. They are the mediator. They are the unbiased mediator. You take it to court, and you expect that the judge
or the theory jury, is
and of course one of the things you have to ask yourself is it's interesting as a check because humans are fallible and we know this. There's an appeals process, for instance.
Right.
The first group could make a mistake. Now when it gets to the Supreme Court. You end up with something like a 5-4 decision. Well, wait a minute. Four people on the losing side felt that, you know, plan B was fair and the winners. So there's still discussion is what I'm saying. There's still the element of human fallibility in all of this. So given that fallibility, you want to make sure that the people that with the guns are as small that those types of disputes are generally not. You don't want many of them. You want to keep that number as small as possible. You want to make sure that the only time you have a gun involved in it, it's a one-shot deal, so to speak, and then you're back out of it. The problem, and then it's backed out. The problem, of course, is that once this particular gunslinger is called into action, it's all too easy to call him in on the disputes that would have been solved.
What's that famous movie? Standing Tall, is it?
Is that what it is?
The one where they call the...
Oh, no, the famous movie is Missouri Breaks.
Missouri Breaks.
Missouri Breaks, Marlon Brando. Oh, no, that's classic. If you haven't seen Missouri Breaks, you have to rent that movie.
That's where they call in the...
They call in the guy. The gunslinger, and it turns out that... And he shows up. And, you know, the next thing you know, the rest of the townspeople are trying to get rid of him. I mean, he's done his job a little too well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're turned in... And this is what happens. This is maybe... You may think of it as apocryphal, but it is... I mean, it's better than that. And it's a good movie. Jack Nicholson, can't go wrong with this movie. You have to see this movie.
Got to see it.
Yep. Okay, so that's good. Thank you. Go through our website, Amazon. Okay, we got no money again from Amazon. Nobody's buying books off our site.
Well, it's Christmas time coming up, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Have hope. Have faith.
Have faith. That's right. Faith. That's right. So anyway, the deal is that I got off the track there. The disputes, and I bring this up because it's interesting. I am personally having a dispute right now with a fellow on eBay. And it was interesting to see how this...
Don't go to Judge Judy. She's a bitch.
Could be.
Wapner was pretty fair, I thought.
Well, see, Wapner started the whole thing. That was the thing.
Gotta see
and again,
Wapner.
But you
gotta
have...
See Wapner.
You have...
Rain Man.
Rain Man. Wapner's oh, that was... Well, now you talk about a good movie. That is
so you're having a dispute with some douchebag bag?
Yeah, on eBay. I sold this thing.
And you've sold trillions of things on eBay.
Oh no. I mean I've got, you know, my I had one complaint from a dork, literally. Mm-hmm. I mean and you know you don't have 700 transactions without somebody complaining.
Right.
I've had one complaint from a guy and it was his fault.
Right.
And his feedback was like -3 or something. Mm-hmm. If you go on there, I think he's not even there anymore. That was over a year ago. 1 out of 700. So anyway, this is number 2. And
now you can't like arbitrarily sell to somebody that doesn't have a
Yes you can.
Oh you can.
Yeah,
okay.
You sure can.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And there
in
you
fact,
go.
Oh yeah. No, in fact I have a thing that says that in fact they're blocked from bidding if they have a feedback under 0.
What's under 0?
-1.
Oh, and so I don't understand. Explain that to the layman's out here.
Okay, well, the fact is you get a feedback rating every time you do a transaction. Somebody can say that the transaction sucked, it was neutral, or it was good.
Right, and, so if they have 100 transactions and they've got, you know, 10 that were bad.
You have a 90% feedback rating.
So they can still buy from you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but so you're set pretty low.
Well, no, actually, but now remember, there's some checks and balances in this, and that is you have to get the money first mm-hmm. before you send the item off.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this guy sent me the money, mm-hmm. and I sent him the item. And he said, I'm not satisfied. You didn't describe it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I think I did, number one. Mm-hmm. And if you're not satisfied, you can not only have all your money back, mm-hmm. I will pay the shipping both ways.
Right.
And he writes back and says, that's not fair. No, literally, he says, that's not fair.
What does he want? Like,
he wanted more money. He said, I need a computer. He says, what you don't know is the reason I got this computer was because I need it right away for my business. And if I don't have a computer this week, I'm in real trouble. And I wrote him back and I said, tell me anything about that ahead of time, number right. one. Like you know, you're bringing something a little late to the, you know,
well,
after the,
two,
after
I,
the
I
game
remember,
is over. You
yeah,
want
no,
to,
in fact, that's exactly, there's a contract provision that's developed out of contract law hundreds of years ago, which is exactly that. That is to say, you have to make the person aware that time is of the essence.
Right.
And if you don't do that, then you lose. You do not get the benefit.
But even in your
description, that's a legal term.
It was. Hey, look, this thing could be flaky. It's been flaky with me.
Right. I put in the ad. In the ad, it said the thing's flaky.
Yeah.
I said, you know, I said it will work. I said, when you get it will work.
Mm-hmm.
Or your money back.
Right.
And so he writes back. And he says it's not working. I said, fine. Here you have your money back. And I said, I'll tell you what. I'll even go the extra mile, and I will pay for the freight to send it back. So you will be out zero. He writes back literally and says, that's not fair. Now, this brings up what we were just talking about. What's fair and what's not fair? Okay, I thought it was fair to offer him all his money back, no harm, no foul kind of thing. He said, no, because I needed it quickly and it's going to cost $700 to repair it. What's fair is you send me another $300 and I will eat the $350 extra that it takes to get this fixed. That's fair. And so I would basically send it to him for free is what it boiled down to.
That's right.
Okay. And he would get it fixed on his time.
You send him some money with some like white powder in there and tell him, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No.
I don't know. He had some anthrax around here somewhere. I lost
it. So anyway, he says, what you've done is fraud and I'm going to complain to PayPal. See, now this is what I'm talking about. The dispute. This is a private, no government's involved in this. Okay. So sure enough, I get a note from PayPal that says, so-and-so has accused you of fraud, and we hereby put a lock on your account, on your PayPal account, so you can't have any more transactions until this is resolved. Now, I'm not happy about this. It's
well, screwed they, me up. They give you a chance to answer, though. Right?
Yes, and I answered, and I said yes. And they said, how do you want to resolve this? Do you want to send the guy the $250, $300? Do you want to give him his money back? Do you want to, you know, has it already been satisfied? You know, what's the deal? And I wrote back, and I said, I will 100% give him his money back. Refund, 100% refund as soon as he sends me. And that was one of the things. Will you give him his money back as soon as he sends the item back? I said, yes, I will do that. So I got a note back from PayPal that says, good, solved. Problem solved. As soon as you get the item back, then you give him his money back and we're all set to go. And we'll send him a note that says, send it back. As far as we're concerned, in fact, their solution was, He's losing shipping.
Because if he'd taken yours, he'd have gotten the shipping paid.
Right.
Now he don't.
Now he don't. So I have heard nothing since then. There is a delay in time. And as I say, but here's the point.
Sounds like a scammer almost.
Well, know. I don't. You know, to be honest with you, I looked at his feedback and it seemed to be okay. You know, it was one of those things. The guy's a bit of a jerk. There's no question. I mean, anybody that wouldn't take all your money back, plus shipping both ways.
We'll post a link to his thing on
the
website.
No, we won't either.
I'm just kidding.
No, we won't. But anyway, the point is what I'm saying is that there's shit happens, okay? Shit happens. The guy's a jerk, but nobody's calling in the government. I'm out. My PayPal account right now happens to be in kind of in limbo, and there was a couple of things that I wanted to bid on that I have to make sure they're going to take a money order.
So I say demand that money.
Right. Well, no, let me tell you, that's, don't laugh.
No, I'm not.
Don't laugh.
Hey, I'm a lawyer.
The simple fact is, yeah, exactly. You're, oh, shut up. I love it. As the lawyer says.
I'll represent you for $5,000.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'll get it for defamation of character slander. I've got the emails here. Right. He's calling me a fraud person. And we're gonna,
plus attorney's fees, $100,000.
That's right. I'll show this guy.
That's right. That fraud accusation, exactly right. That's
no, and I mean, in fact, I've got the email. He says that is, and I sent him back. In fact, I sent him back. I said, well, no, I said, I sent him back the dictionary definition of fraud, which is intent to deceive with monetary gain. I said, A, there's no intent to deceive because it was working when it left here. And number two, I've got a picture to prove it. Mm-hmm. And number two, there's no monetary gain. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's zero. This is a wash. You can have your money back. So, and he writes back. He says, well, you can play games with the dictionary, but this is fraud. And so, and I'm going like, well, you know, look, there's no arguing with that. No. I mean, that's, so anyway, my point again, to come back to this, this is being resolved. It's costing me, you know, some time and effort and some stuff like that and everything, but it's being resolved with no guns involved here, at least at this point. And again, what's the worst that can happen? You know, he takes a hammer. Yeah, that. Actually, more. When, as you say, when there's a tactical nuclear device that goes off, I know where he lives.
Right.
So,
right,
I mean,
right.
I had to send the
you
thing
have
to
the address.
I right. have the address.
Right,
so.
Right.
There is the ultimate solution.
Right.
The final solution.
Yeah, just call it the hangar dogs.
Yeah, no problem. We can targeting missile.
What you do is you wheel one of those target practice devices, like those that big fake tank. You wheel that out in front of their house, and then you call in an airstrike.
Yeah, right. Well, what you do is you put a red star on it or something.
Right.
So you make sure they'd have to take it out.
Right. Red star on
yeah,
it.
No, yeah.
You just go there, you take it, you rip the tarp off, it's got a red star on it, you're peeling away.
That's right. No, yeah. Or it could be like a Venezuelan tank. Hugo's decided to invade.
Yeah, you got
we're taking him out.
You got some Hugo Muppet in the in the portal.
Yeah, that's whatever, right. Yeah. No, so anyway, but again, this is the type of thing. It's aggravating, yeah. But
all right, tie this back in now.
Just did because what I'm saying is there are voluntary exchanges. This is one of those. The mediation process is a little tedious. There are no guns involved. There's going to be, so at least one of the parties is going to be unhappy when it's all over. Actually, both parties are probably going to be unhappy because I don't know how I'm going to get this thing, if he's going to send it back or not. And again, it'll all work itself out. I'm saying that in a, as Stefan Molyneux would say, this is anarchy in a way. It's better than what we've got, not knowing what the true anarchy, of course, is you don't know what the government's going to do from one day to the next. You know, witness here in Russia when two people suddenly are a mob. And I mean, it could happen here, and it will be the kinds of things that we see happening that the government has is what they call it proactive. When they pass a law that says, you know, people might do this, so we're going to go ahead and pass a law against it anyway. And then the net, you get scooped up. Even the people who mean well get scooped up in the system. You can have the system basically can work you can get a criminal who beats the system.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can get people like you've defended that get scooped up in the system. And they're like the, you know, the dolphins in the tuna fish thing or whatever.
Right.
It is. So the system very often doesn't work because of human fallibilities. And to that extent, the system ought to be as small as possible. You ought to not go with the legal gun system. You ought to stay out of that system as much as you can and make it as small as possible.
Well, and I don't think to bring this back to the original subject that our leaders today, when they pass a law about the rising of the tides or the, you know, fuel efficiency of the cars, they're not thinking that those rules are enforced by guns ultimately.
Right. That is it exactly. You have hit the nail on the head. That's right. And of course they are only looking at a short term, they say, well, who could argue with this? I mean, we're talking about...
It's a good idea.
And the only thing that has to happen here is that a couple of execs in Detroit, you know, there's maybe five people who are going to be affected by this. A couple of executives in Detroit have to tell their engineers, put together a car that gets 35 miles a gallon. Right. Problem solved.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, no, sorry. You know, in the way things work, there's going to be millions of people. And what's going to happen is... the guns will be drawn if it doesn't work out. If
right.
if you get a car. As you, I can tell you, for instance, if you had a seatbelt in your car and it wasn't connected when the seatbelt laws first came out, and it wasn't connected, the car wouldn't start. Well, people were what they were doing was connecting it ahead of time and then sitting on it. That was against the law. Then it turned out that sometimes the seatbelt didn't work. It didn't connect up, so you couldn't start your car. So you had it towed to the shop. It turned out that it was a SWAT team offense for the fellow in the shop to disconnect the seatbelt so that the car would start thing, so you could have your own car back. I mean, this is to the extent that these things. So now they finally got to the point now where I just have a blinking red light that tells me that I'm an idiot. But that's fine. I can live with that. Mm-hmm. But this is the kind of thing that these guys in the 35 miles a gallon, they don't see what, I don't know what's going to happen, but I can tell you right now, this is a distortion that you're not going to want to see. This is going to be a bad thing. Let's take a short break.
Okay.
Hey, this is Engineer Eric from the Jimmy Dunn Show, and you just got done listening to part one of our December 4th podcast. If you need part two, you can go to jimmydunn.com or get it from your favorite podcast directory.
Traffic jam.